Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to a special Suspense Radio live edition here that we have on Friday morning from 8 o'clock in Los Angeles, California. We're going to have author David Balducci joining us in just a second. So I know it might be a little early, so I'm getting my orange juice. I'm getting myself revved. I got to get myself going because it's a little bit earlier than we normally do it. We normally, of course, on it Friday night. So hang out there. Relax. We'll be right back. So 30 minutes, actually. This is a 30-minute special of Suspense Radio. We'll start right now. Good Friday morning to everybody. I'll tell you, we got a great show. We have a 30-minute special here with New York Times bestselling author David Balducci. He's going to be talking about his latest book, which comes out on Tuesday, Hell's Corner. It's the fifth book in his Camel Club series. And I want to remind everybody again that we will not have a show tonight. We will come back on Tuesday. We're going to have Maria Force and David Moody on. And then on Tuesday, you can always go back. You can listen to Tuesday's show that we had on. You can always go to Blog Talk Radio, listen to everything past, present, iTunes, Zune, Netflix, all the stations out there is where we're at. So, you know, if you don't listen live, that's okay. You can always go back and listen to it later. But it gives us our great pleasure to be able to talk here with David. We haven't talked to him in about a year. He was in our September 09 edition, and I believe that was for his book True Blue. Now he's back with his fifth installment of the Camel Club series, calls Hell's Corner. Again, that comes out on Tuesday, and you can find all the information that you want to here on davidbalducci.com. So, David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Good to be here.
Yeah, so fifth book, Camel Club series, Hell's Corner. What made you decide to go ahead and jump back into the Camel Club here? Because that was your first one since 2008.
Yeah, they're an intriguing bunch, and I thought that I had left enough of a cliffhanger in the last novel, Divine Justice, for Stone to come back with his friends and to do something else. I enjoy hanging out with the characters, really. That was the main litmus test for me. I wanted to pen another Camel Club because I wanted to bring these guys back on the page.
Yeah, and do you find it difficult yourself when you're going to do a book? Because you do have, you know, A. Shaw series, The Camel Club, King Maxwell. So, you know, you have some series going on. Is it difficult for you to say, oh, I'm going to pick this one this time or this one this time?
Yeah, you know, it's just kind of a feeling you have. Do I have a story that fits that series that would fit a King and Maxwell or a Shaw or a Camel Club? And sometimes if you do, then you think, okay, it's a good time to bring them back for that. The story really has to fit the characters. I don't want to try to wedge a character into a story where that character really shouldn't be. So they all cylinders have to sort of operate in. The characters have to fit the plot. And then when it does, as it did in Hell's Corner, I sit down and I write the book.
So that's interesting. So you sit there and you think of the story and you're like, okay, which one of my characters would be best in that setting? And then, bam, here you come out and, you know, here comes Hell's Corner on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's an interesting experiment to do from time to time. Or, you know, with True Blue, with brand new characters, I had a new story that really didn't fit any of the other characters. And I wanted to start fresh with new characters that I were interested in creating and evolving over the course of a book or maybe multiple books. So that happens too. But I was thinking about this idea for Hell's Corner, set in Washington, D.C., had a lot of the political intrigue that the Camel Club had been involved in previously. It seemed like a natural fit for them.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's the good thing is that, you know, you do have the ability, because you're very much an adaptable writer, that you can have those plots, you can bring those characters out, you know, and they come out there, and that's got to be such a great talent, something that, you know, you've been able to come since Absolute Power until now.
Yeah, it is, and it's the more books you write. My first probably 12 or 13 books were all standalone. None of the characters ever came back, nothing recurring, no series. And then when I started to write The Camel Club and then King and Maxwell, you know, the ideas of bringing characters back and being able to evolve the character arcs over a number of books really sort of started taking precedent in my mind. And now really, not that I won't write fresh characters and you know, brand new stories going forward, I certainly will. It's nice to have that those groups sort of in my wheelhouse that I can bring back from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, so you mentioned that. So it sounds like, you know, you're enjoying more of the idea of writing the series instead of going back and doing the standalones. And I'm sure that you get this question asked, is that, you know, characters that you've had back in those standalone books, you know, how are you going to bring any of those characters back and this and that? Or it just sounds like you're like, no, if I'm going to do a standalone, I'm going to do a standalone and I'm going to have my series.
Yeah, if I was going to bring a character back from previous books that were standalones, I wrote a book years ago called Last Man Standing with Webb London. I get a lot of requests from fans because the end of that book was very open-ended, and a lot of fans have written in and said, you know, we'd love to have another Webb London book. If I were going to go back and do one of the older books in the series, it would probably be that one.
It would be that one, yeah. So how difficult, I mean, does it happen for you is, you know, now that you're on your fifth book of the Camel Club here, Hell's Corner, for you to go ahead and still keep the characters fresh, because I know that becomes difficult, I think, with that authors write, that it is difficult for them to do.
It is. You know, one way I've tried to do it is, with each of the books, introduce a new character into the series. You know, I did it with Stone Cold and Harry Finn. I did it in Divine Justice with Abby Riker. In The Collectors, I did it with Annabelle Conroy. And in this book, I do it with Mary Chapman, a British MI6 agent who comes over from England to help Stone try to solve this case. So that's one way to inject sort of a freshness and a new angle, is by putting a very prominent character coming in who's brand new, who adds some fresh air and some new blood to the series, and, you know, keeps it kind of lively.
And you're doing some touring here, I see, coming up. Not an extensive tour,
right,
but you're starting off here Thursday on November 11th, and you're going to be in Kentucky for a little bit, and you're going back to Virginia. Now,
right.
Is this something that you decided you were going to cut your tours back a little bit? Because I think you've done more in the past.
Yeah, you know, the years go by, and, you know, kids get older, and there are a lot of more significant milestones, you know, on the home front you don't want to miss. I've cut my tours back. I think every writer has to pay his or her dues early on. I certainly did. I used to do coast-to-coast, you know, 25, 30-city tours, and I did that for years. And I tour throughout the year, you know, not just when I have a book coming out. I do speeches and book signing events, you know, across the country throughout the year that a lot of, you know, fans may not know about, but I certainly know about because I'm traveling to those places. So I try to spread it out, not have such a huge focus and concentration for a brief period of time when I have a book come out, but spread it out over the year so that other people can see me and I can travel to new places. But yeah, book tours for me have become less important because I do travel widely during the course of the year, but I try to hit places. That trips in Kentucky, a community in Kentucky adopted Wish You Well, one of my books that I wrote, as a book the whole community was reading, so I'm going and doing events there with the college and local high school and a community event. That's really where that book came, that event came from, and the others are more traditional book signing events at bookstores.
Now, are you the one who goes out and you're picking exactly where you're going to go? Because I know that, you know, a lot of authors are not doing that, and they are cutting back a lot on tours, and maybe you're doing more blog stuff to get your book out there, because marketing is the biggest problem, I think, that authors have right now. And, you know, but the good thing is you've reached a level where marketing is, you know, you're getting a lot of help from your publisher, which is a really great thing. So, but are you picking this yourself?
Publisher typically comes to me and says, you know, where would you like to go this year? Do you have any events you want to do? Any particular place or bookstore you want to go to? And I would tell them if I do or not. They may come forward and say, you know, this bookstore really has done a great job with your book. They'd love to have you. They've been asking for years. Would you go there? And I would, you know, sometimes choose to go there or not. So that's typically, it's kind of a give and take sort of thing. You sit down and map it out and say, where would I like to go? And, you know, where would it be best for me to go for this particular book that I haven't been to an area in a while?
You know, now here's something that's interesting too. You're starting to see some authors expand themselves and try to jump out of like the genre that they're familiar with. And I wondered if that's something that you were thinking of ever doing, because, you know, you do a lot of, you know, your political crime is absolutely, you know, tremendous, and you're good with that. But have you ever thought about sitting here and saying, you know what, I think I'm going to jump out of maybe political and do something where it's, you know, like a dead mystery or, you know, something else a little bit? Do you have those stories that fall around in your head that you worked that
sure,
you're trying to get out?
Sure. In fact, next year, it's funny you mentioned it, in June, I'll be publishing a book called One Summer that's a family drama. That's totally different from anything I've written before. I guess the closest comes to it is Wish You Well. That I came up with the idea when I was sitting in church waiting for my son's confirmation ceremony to begin, and I had this like an hour to wait, and this idea just sort of flashed in my mind, and I spent the next couple of months writing the story. And it was very different, but I consider myself just a storyteller. Most of my novels are thrillers, obviously, but I've written, you know, Christmas Train, which is kind of a screwball comedy, and and I've also been approached by Scholastic for their 39 Clues series books. They have a new series coming out based on the same characters. I think it'll be 6 or 7 books. They've asked me to write the final book in that series for young adults, ages 8 to 13. So that's another thing that I have on my plate. That'll be a challenge for me, and I talked with the Scholastic editor a while back when I was in New York and asked her why she had thought of me, because obviously my books are not YA. And she said, well, I read one of your novels called First Family, and there was a teenage girl in there, 12 or 13 years old, and it was she was such a tremendous character that I knew as soon as I finished the book, I knew that you could write for YA. And so that's where that sort of gig came from.
Trying to jump yourself? I mean, is that something that, you know, you get that sense of, you know, like when you're doing your first book, you kind of get that sense of anxiety, like the same thing you get when you're thinking about, wow, I'm going to do something that's just completely different.
Absolutely. I tell people that every book I sit down to write, I write it like my first novel, with an edge of fear. I hate complacency. I really do. It's like my first novel over and over again because I'm afraid I can't bring the magic again. I don't want to get complacent. I don't want to get formulaic. I've always thought that when a writer thinks he's figured it out, that's when he loses his edge, because all he's going to do is say, how did I do it last time, and let me kind of just change the names and go forward from there and make it sort of easy on myself. I try to go outside the box, you know, with every book, and fear is a great combatant to complacency, and that's really what I try to bring to bear every time. It's just a lot of fear, a lot of edginess, and you know, not sure if I can do it again, and that works for me.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the reasons why when you look at, like, yourself, you don't just have one main series. You're going ahead and you're doing other ones, like, you know, like the Camel Club here, Maxwell, and because it keeps you fresh and it keeps people going into different directions, because you might have, you know, so many different, you know, things going on. So when the new book comes out, like Hell's Corner, they're like, oh, great, another Camel Club, 2008. It's not just the anticipation of them saying, oh, it's another one of these or it's another one of these.
That's right. I think you really hit it on the head with that. It's such a diversity of work, and they're all different, even though you can all sort of classify them in the genre of thriller. Some are less thriller-esque and more sort of mystery whodunits. Some are political, some are not political, some are international, and others are not. So really, I think every time they pull out one of these books, it really does feel different. It feels like, wow, I haven't seen these people in a while, and now they're doing something totally different than what you did in the last book. And it gives that freshness to it, and, you know, a feeling of, I haven't seen this before, that I think people like. You know, some people are very comfortable with formula books where you get the same character sort of doing this. I mean, I read them, and I read books other writers have written that are very successful, but I know that on, like, page 19 is when the person's going to make that special meal they make in every book. And on page 60, you know, here comes the twist where somebody close to them is going to be killed. And, you know, it just happens in every book, and it feels comfortable. It's kind of like, you know, it's like eating the meatloaf, you know, every Friday. It's comforting, it's good food, and you look forward to it. But for me, it's never been a way I can comfortably write, because I feel like I'd sort of bore myself, you know, and I don't think I could bring the same passion to the words that I would otherwise bring by being out there in uncharted territory.
So would you say, would Hell's Corner, and would this be the same with all of your books and new in their series and when you write this, would you say that Hell's Corner is one of your most difficult ones that you've had to write in the Camel Club series, one of your most challenging?
It was one of my most challenging, just because, you know, I've got the Camel Club members who are pretty well evolved as characters, but I'm still discovering things with John Carr / Oliver Stone that I, you know, had never covered before in the books, peeling layers away from the character. And this novel, the plotting was so intricate, I had to sort of keep all the balls in the air and keep leading the reader inexorably down one path. That even it's smoke and mirrors, but, you know, you uncover one thing after another, and you think you're on the right path, then you're on the wrong path, but finally you're on the right path, and all the twists that are coming up, you know, are just going to be sort of smoke and mirrors and red herring, so you know not to really pay attention to those, because you finally figured it out, at least where the main mystery is going. And then when you're in your comfort zone as a reader, and you're in the little car, and you're going down the electric path, and you know exactly where you're going to go, because all the other stuff is just extraneous, Then I tip you on, I tip the car over, you know, knock you out of the car. You go rolling down the side of the mountain, and you don't never know what the hell hit you, because everything you thought you had figured out and had worked your way through turned out to be not the case at all. And that's a tricky plot to deliver. And I worked really hard trying to do it as well as I could in this book, because every card you lay down on the table is an important card, because if you don't lay it down just the right way, you know, you've blown it.
Right. I mean, when you got that many tangents and those many paths coming together, it's a very intricate web that, and readers will catch things too. They'll be like, wait a second, you said something over here, but that doesn't mess what's over here. So it does make it very difficult in books to do it that way.
It does. And, you know, also readers, even the astute ones sometimes, they'll commit the cardinal sin of a detective, of a rookie detective, let's say. They believe something that someone tells them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
Without corroborating evidence or some other person's statement that would corroborate that. And I use that device in this book where you can't believe everything that everybody says, no matter who they are and where they're coming from. And if you do, you know, you do it at your own risk, and it could turn out later to you go back and say, oh, Jesus, you know, they did say that. It didn't mesh with what happened later, but they weren't telling the truth. And I believe them anyway. So, yeah, you have to take that into account as well.
And so do you get a lot of readers that will sit here and, you know, email you or contact you, write you, and they'll give you a very strong emotional sense of your characters by saying, you know, I love this character or I hate that character. And you do you get that a lot? Because I think that would be an author's greatest treat, because if you get a love or even a hate, you know that you've touched them someplace emotionally and that you've done your job.
I get those emails every day from people, emails and letters, you know, real old-fashioned letters, you know, pen and paper letters every day.
Wow.
We get those from people all over the world. And the book I wrote in the spring called Deliverance from Evil, it had in one chapter, like three pages, was a very intense torture scene where this guy was, you know, doing unspeakable things to someone else. And I got so many emails from people saying, oh, my God, it was just the most horrible scene I've ever read. I had to skip over it. I couldn't read the whole thing. I had to put the book down for a while after I read it. This creature you've created was so evil, I hated him, and I wanted him to, you know, to die. And even though what happened at the end of the book was not bad enough, you know, I wanted him to be in more pain. And don't ever write something like that again. It was too intense. So I look at that, and it's kind of a compliment, because just using mere words on a page, I was able to extract such emotion from people with no pictures, no cool soundtrack, just words. So I really do look at those and kind of smile and say, you know, hey, I did my job.
Absolutely. And you just nailed that on the head. You're having to create a world that people cannot see and visualize. And in today's day and age with the internet and the TV and and everything going on, writers still, it makes it even more challenging that you have to create a world where they have to actually use their imagination again, where they never had to do. Now they don't have to anymore because everything is right there for them. And
yeah,
that just makes it more difficult, I think, in today's day and age than it was, you know, probably 15 years ago before the internet and everything, that, you know, you didn't have visualization. Now you guys have a lot more difficult work to do.
You're absolutely right about that. Everybody wants picture and sound because that's their whole life. They, you know, they pop the computer screen and there it is. You know, there's the video, there are the pictures, there's the soundtrack. So for the old-fashioned, you know, scriveners to put pen to paper and try to have that same effect with words, you have to work really hard, and you have to be as good as you can possibly be, because you're competing against a lot of stuff that, you know, 10 or 15 years ago was not even in the playing field, but you have to compete against it.
Right, and are we going to see another one of your, has any one of your other books, you know, speaking of, you know, visualization, any one of your other books been optioned to be either, you know, big screen movie, TV series, because now we're starting to see some of those writers like Castle and, you know, Tess Gerritsen and some of the other ones, they're getting actual TV series now out of their characters.
Right. Well, True Blue was optioned by a production company in Los Angeles, Berman Braun Production Company, so there's a lot of really cool stuff. And they're taking True Blue around to the various networks, both traditional and cable, to try to set up as a network television series. So I'll hear, you know, something about that hopefully relatively soon, and hopefully it'll be a positive thing.
Nice, yeah, because that, I mean, I think, and I don't know if that's the actual pinnacle for an author. I guess you want to say, when you're writing a book, what would be the absolute pinnacle? Is it an award? Is it, you know, to be the number one book of the year? Is it to be, you know, something like, you know, on TV, you know, big screen movie, things like that? What is it for you? The pinnacle of your book to say, my book this is where my, you know, this is where it's at. This is my summit.
Well, you know, I wouldn't. It's great commercially if your book is made into a movie, you sell a lot more books. It's really great if your book is made into a television series because it really gets your name out there, and people will probably buy more of all of your books because of that. But, you know, for me, I don't tie my sense of success to film or television. I kind of tie it to the fact that more and more people read my books and, you know, write and tell me that they do. And when I go places and, you know, I walk into a bookstore or an event and there's, you know, 1,000 people there, I'm really happy that I'm there and that I can stand up and talk to them and entertain them and make them laugh and feel something and have them come up to me later and say how much, you know, they've read my books and how much they love them. That might be the first books they've read in years, and now they read lots of other authors too. That's kind of, you know, for me, the litmus test of success, where you can turn people who were not readers into readers.
Yeah.
In this day and age of the internet and everything else, that's an accomplishment. And for me, that's kind of, you know, where I gauge my success.
Absolutely. And now I want to just kind of talk here about like maybe like a little morbid is okay. So now, well, I've always been interested in this and that because like your series, like the Camel Club and Maxwell and, you know, King, do you ever sit down and think and say, okay, you know what? I know I'm only going to write. Now, you don't have to tell me if you know how many books you're going to write, but I know I'm only going to write so many books because I'm just going to retire these characters. And you've decided that you've already going to do it, but you're either going to leave it open-ended or you're going to blow everybody up. So then, therefore, it's going to be like, people, they're not coming back. You can stop writing me.
Yeah. Well, in the Camel Club, in book three, Stone Cold, I killed off one of the prominent members of the Camel Club, Milton Farb. And I got a mountain of response.
I bet
back
you did.
Readers that they could not believe that I'd done that. People were, you know, weeping and they're so mad at me that I could have done that. And some of them said, why couldn't you have killed Caleb, you know, the librarian, or one of the others, but not Milton, poor Milton. And so I guess in answer to your question, it's difficult to kill off characters that, you know, you've spent a long time with. I think if I had to choose, if I knew I weren't going to write any more books, I would just write a story where tied up a lot of loose ends and let them go off, you know, into the sunset. I think, you know, wiping them all out would do a disservice to the books that they were in and would just be sort of, you know, just a superficial maneuver by me rather than true storytelling. If I wanted to write a story where they were involved in something so dangerous that not even they could survive it and they all went out with a bang, so be it. But I think it would be driven by the story more so than any type of message I was trying to send to the readers of finality with the series.
Yeah, and so, you know, the reason I ask is because, you know, with Hell's Corner, you know, coming out in 3 days, I wanted to, you know, sense people to know, hey, you know what, maybe this is the last time you're going to see the Camel Club.
Right.
Maybe they all blow up at the end. Who knows what's going to happen? But I don't know if, as a writer myself, and it would be difficult to see, okay, could you, so you didn't have to answer the fan mail, or would it be more like the, you know, like the Misery sector where somebody comes back and says, no, you're bringing them back.
Yeah.
I don't care how you do it, but you're doing it. So
yeah, no,
I know.
If I saw Kathy Bates coming down the road, I might change my mind.
Yeah, you're like, all right.
Yeah, and I can always do, you know, I can always do a prequel. There's that option where I go back and show them as younger people, like, even though I killed them off in the book. So I try not to let certainly the fans and readers are important to me, but I have to write my own stories too. I can't let, you know, because I get a bunch of emails saying don't do this or do this, I can't sort of dictate to them. That's why I do what I do. I have to write my own stories, but it's still hard, you know. And at the end of the day too, you've lived with these characters for many, many books, and do I actually want to kill them off? Do I want to write the scene where they breathe their last? You know, that's difficult as well.
Yeah, you're actually, you know, you're the creator and the executioner, all in one.
I am. I'm definitely God.
Kind of a weird...
I play God in the books. I do, you know, whatever I want happens.
Yeah, you wield your wand, and they just do it. So that's the good thing. So, yeah. Well, I'll tell you. I mean, your book Hell's Corner comes out on Tuesday. We've been speaking here with David Balducci. You can go to. You got a lot of information up there because you have all your books. Question and answers, and you can can they contact you through your site too?
They can, yeah. Just go to davidbalducci.com. There's a website web page there for people to put comments and emails, and I see them all.
and you read them all, and you don't respond to all of them, but I'm sure that you respond to as many as you can. And
oh, absolutely. And it's a question that's frequently asked, they'll get a response back that we send to lots of people. If it's a particular question, that I have an answer for, then I certainly answer people back, and we try to do it pretty promptly.
And they can keep track of you by your newsletter, because I know you have an e-newsletter that goes out people to on the site.
Yeah, it's a really versatile website. A lot of information there. They can, post comments if they want. Discussion boards. There's a Twitter feed. There's a Facebook page that they can put their comments on. It's a lot of places for them to exercise their right to voice their opinion.
Do you find that nice that you can sit there on Facebook and Twitter, and you say, "Oh my God, I have to do a Facebook posting because I haven't done one in like 2 days"?
Yeah,
I feel the pressure sometimes.
I know. I'm not huge on that. I may, not do postings for a while. I only do postings when I have actually something important to say, or this book is coming out, or here's a clip from the audio that you might want to listen to, or something of significance. I don't sit around trying to think of, stuff that nobody cares about to put on there just so I could say I put something on there. I try to
really. You don't say I'm going to breakfast at Denny's now. Oh, now I'm going to
It's such a close call, but I just pulled back every time I wanted to do that.
I know. I see that all the time. People are like, "Yeah, I'm eating at McDonald's." I'm, "Oh, great, dude."
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess that's great for a lot of people, but that's good. So, well, I'll tell you what, David, I know you got to run, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great. So, everybody, Hell's Corner, the book comes out November 9th. DavidBalducci.com or DavidBalducci.com. Find out more information, so everybody go get the book. So, David, again, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here, and we will talk, soon.
Same here. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, again, everybody, that was David Balducci. We had best-selling author, Camel Club series, fifth book, Hell's Corner. It's definitely one that you want to go out and pick up. It's going to be, it's one of those great reads that you can just sink your teeth into and, get you going with twists and turns and everything else. And, you feel gasping and excited and sad and happy all at the same time. So when you can bring those kinds of emotions into a book and you feel all, definitely it's a winner. So I want to thank David so much for coming on here. Please remember that on Tuesday, we are going to have Maria Force, and we are going to have David Moody calling us in here from England, which is going to be exciting because we actually get to call him. So I'm hoping that we can get that done, but that's going to be a great show. And we did have Alan Jacobson and John Miller on last Tuesday, so you can go back and listen to that. We also had Alan Dershowitz, and we had Alan Dershowitz on the show. You can go listen to that along with Jeff Sherritt. Our Halloween special is really interesting. It's the first time we've ever done that. So we have some short stories that we're reading off on, kind of a nice Halloween kind of theme that we did. So, we have a lot of great authors that you can go back and listen to and hear their books and hear exactly what's going on with them and what's coming up new and what's going to be coming out, later. So, check out blogtalkradio.com. Go to Suspense Magazine. See everything that we got coming up. We got a great lineup for you. Still trying to nail down some authors, dates that we are getting in here for November. One of them is John Soule. Another one is Clive Cussler. We're going to have Patricia Cornwell coming up here on November the 30th. She's also going to have another interview, which is going to be different from the radio show, in the magazine. She'll be able to get here for the December issue of Suspense Magazine, which is going to be on sale probably right around the beginning of December, if not late November, just because of how Thanksgiving and how they typically put their magazines out. So, again, I want to thank everybody for joining us, and, it's been great. We will see you here on Tuesday. There is no show Friday night. So thank you for our 30-minute special here with best-selling author David Balducci talking about Hell's Corner. Go pick that up on November 9th, and then listen to our show. So run out early, pick up a book, read it, listen to it. See you then. Have a great day.